And welcome back in. It is hour two of Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Peter LaViolette, Coffee with the Coach, coming up at the bottom of the hour as he talks with Pete Weber. We are broadcasting live from the Lexus Lounge inside of Bridgestone Arena, and they are hosting a tournament watch party today. So join 102.5 The Game as we broadcast live from the Lexus Lounge all day today for this one-of-a-kind experience that offers guests the following: watching all tournament games on multiple LED TVs, unlimited draft beer and house wine and soft drinks, unlimited buffet featuring sandwiches, pizza, wings, and more, a Jack Daniel's sampling, and of course you can watch the practice sessions held at Bridgestone Arena. To purchase tickets, call 615-770-7800 or visit NashvillePredators.com/watchparty18. Chase led us into the facilities this morning, and as we were walking back through the corridors of Bridgestone Arena, we saw the locker rooms for the teams that are going to be competing in March Madness tomorrow here in Nashville, including we saw the Texas entrance with the great Shaka Smart. So that was pretty cool. So you get to see all of that if you come on out today for our tournament watch party. All right, Braden, it is March Madness. It is tournament time. Let's take a look and unveil our brackets. We gave the Final Four yesterday. It is now time to rehash that quickly, the Final Four, move into our national championship, give you upsets. Let's get nerdy. Let's get nerdy.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So we want to do national title picks here, or do we want to do...
Let's do upsets.
Yeah, let's work our way in.
Because the first round upset, I think, is one of the things that people are always asking about. They always want to know about, hey, who you got? Oh, you got not. And Chase sat down this morning. First thing he said to me, hey, which 12's going to win? Like, that's what people are asking themselves.
There's always a 12 that beats a 5.
Well, so, how many total first-round upsets seeding-wise do you have?
Are you counting the 10s?
Yep, I'm counting a 9 over an 8.
Because a 10 may not be favored in the game, so you have to look at the Vegas line and look at the 8s and 9s and 7s and 10s. I don't ever count anything. To me, a true upset has to be an 11 seed or higher. Like, a true upset has to be an 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
You know what's funny? Like
I don't count a 9 or a 10. Like, if you're picking, if you're filling out your bracket, a 9 seed making it to the second round or the like is a big difference between making the third round, right? So if you pick Alabama to beat Villanova, that's the upset. Alabama beating Virginia Tech isn't an upset.
You don't think so?
No, not if they're favored.
Well, yeah, I just literally, and you know I love Vegas and the numbers. This is, and I think I said this a couple days ago, this is the only time of the year for anything sports related that I don't even look at spreads. I simply look at the sheet, and I'm going based off of what I know about the teams and the seeds.
I've got Providence beating Texas A&M as a 10-7. I've got Texas over Nevada. I would not consider either of those NCAA tournament upsets.
Okay.
I've got Alabama beating Virginia Tech, NC State beating Seton Hall. I would not consider any of those upsets. To me, the upsets are once you get into the I'm taking Loyola Chicago to beat Miami.
Me
That's
too.
An 11 over a 6. Loyola Chicago is a very good Missouri Valley Conference. They're a championship team. That's probably one of the best mid-major automatic bids in the entire country. Miami is a decent basketball team, but they're nothing special. This is not one of Jim Larranaga's best teams. I will take Loyola Chicago to beat Miami. That, to me, St. Bonaventure over Florida, that is an upset. New Mexico State over Clemson, I've got them beating Clemson. New Mexico State's got some length and some size down low for a mid-major. Clemson is missing its number two player in Dante Grantham. That's to me, those are sort of the upsets. I also like South Dakota State over Ohio State. They have a first-round potential NBA draft pick, and Mike Dom, I think, is going to – and Ohio State sort of overachieved all year. They're like a poor man's Big Ten version of Tennessee, and I don't think they're talented enough to just sort of, you know, run past people. And I actually think South Dakota State might have the best player on the floor. So give me South Dakota State in that one. And then I'm picking Charleston against Auburn just because Julian Council told me to.
Okay,
well,
that's
your first mistake.
I've got a total of 8 seeded upsets. So just based on the seed alone, I've got Loyola Chicago, I've got Texas, I've got Alabama, I've got Marshall, I've got NC State, New Mexico State, Cuse, and Oklahoma. Those are my technical upsets based on just the seeding and numbers.
Yeah, I also have Marshall as well beating Wichita State. That is going to be a really, really fun basketball game. It's tomorrow at 1:30. That is a game that's a really up and down, a lot of offense spread out, wide open. That should be a ton of fun. I also have Syracuse beating TCU as well. So I've got 7, not counting the 9s and the 10s, which I'm not counting. I've got 7. I've got Loyola Chicago, South Dakota State. I've got New Mexico State, Charleston, Syracuse, St. Bonaventure, and Marshall.
Okay.
one I struggled with was Murray State, West Virginia.
I think there's a lot to like about that, and if obviously locally that matters. That game's tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time, I believe. Everything that I love about Murray State, the problem is it's the same reasons. They want to play fast. They want to play up and down. They want to get out and run. The problem is West Virginia is that's what they do best. Mm-hmm. And so I think trying to speed up West Virginia is a really dangerous thing to do. So as much as I'm rooting for Murray State with the local ties, I want to see them do well. I don't think they match up well with West Virginia. I think West Virginia is a dangerous team. They're hard to beat in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They never go to the Final Four. I think Huggins has gone one time. You don't want to speed up West Virginia. That's not what you want to do.
All right, let's give our Final Four once again, just to rehash from yesterday, and then we'll go to our championship game. I've got Virginia coming out of the top left. I've got Michigan from the bottom left, a one against a three.
So the south and the west.
Correct. And then the top right of your bracket, I've got West Virginia, the five. And I've got
Bold Cotton.
Duke, the two. So I've got a one, a two, a three, and a five.
We don't have a single team that's the same, which I find really interesting. I've got Arizona coming out of the south, facing off against North Carolina coming out of the west. On the right side of the bracket, I've got Villanova, who I think is the best program in college basketball right now, going up against Michigan State. D-Mace will love that, coming out of the Midwest. And I've got – should I go one more step further? I should
do it.
Just reminding people. I've got Arizona, North Carolina, Villanova, and Michigan State. I've got Arizona and Michigan State playing in the national championship game. Sorry, D-Mace. Arizona cuts down the nets. Sean Miller finally gets his national championship and his Final Four. He may be thrown in prison afterward, but I don't care.
They may have to give it back.
He may have to give it back, and they're going to have the first pick in the NBA draft. I'm sorry, Trae Young, but DeAndre Ayton is the best player in this tournament. He will carry Arizona to a national championship. The Wildcats cut down the nets. There you go.
I've got Virginia defeating Michigan as the most balanced defensive-oriented team. Virginia, they are boring, but they are efficient. They beat John Beilein in the Wolverines, so they get to San Antonio for the national championship Monday night. And then I've got Duke ending West Virginia's semi-Cinderella run, so it'll be an all-ACC national title, much like the SEC represented in college football with Alabama, Georgia. It'll be Virginia and Duke. And then I am going with the 2-seed Duke Blue Devils. I think the combination of Wendell Carter, Marvin Bagley, and Grayson Allen, even though I do not like Grayson Allen, I think he goes
like
out a national
championship. Here's a question about that. I'm all of a sudden now going to root for your bracket. Because if Duke and Virginia play in a national championship game, who do we know that would lose his mind if he had to watch those two compete for a national championship?
The guy that doesn't follow me on Twitter, that would be Julian Council.
Julian Council hates the Duke Blue Devils and the Virginia Cavaliers more than anything on this planet. If those two teams played the national championship game, he might have to not watch a college basketball national title game for the first time in his life, because that's his baby college basketball. I don't think he could handle watching Virginia play Duke in the national title game.
Or he just puts a barf bag next to him for the entire broadcast.
I am now openly rooting for your bracket to come true.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. All right, so that is our Final Four, our national championship, and our upsets. But will this be a bust in the tournament for the SEC? That's coming up next. It's Morning Drive on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You know, I just had an epiphany, Braden. Just hearing Kyle Turris bringing us back from break, Kyle Turris almost sounds identical to Josh Upton. I mean, I literally feel like he sounds 100% like Josh Upton. Now, I don't know, Josh, can you
I can buy that.
Can you play that little rejoiner of Kyle Turris again?
Let me find it.
All right, let me know when you have it.
This is not paying off the tees.
I'm just saying, he sounds exactly like Kyle Turris. So we'll do a little compare and contrast in a moment. But
why don't I tell you why the SEC is going to suck this March?
Yeah, just kill my spirits, be Mr. Negative, go right ahead.
No, great year for the SEC. Well, eight teams in, record eight teams in. Tennessee, Rick Barnes, great season. Coach of the Year, Player of the Year, Grant Williams. Auburn with a great season. All this good stuff. My issue with the SEC in the tournament is the matchups are awful. How many eights and sevens and nines did they get? Well, you got Texas A&M as a 7, you've got Arkansas as a 7, you've got Alabama as a 9, which means they've got really, really difficult second-round matchups with either a 1 or a 2 seed. So those three have really difficult matchups. In fact, I think Providence is going to beat A&M in the first round. So those three right there aren't really to oh, Missouri as an 8 seed. So even if any of those four win, you're going to run into a giant roadblock or hurdle in the second round. So it's a bad matchup for those four teams. So what about the other four teams? Well, Florida's playing awful basketball right now. Everyone's picking them to be upset, and they've got to play a Texas Tech team that nobody in this area knows about, but is a very, very good defensive basketball team. So Florida doesn't look like it's coming out of its pod. Auburn is playing ridiculously inefficient basketball. We have no idea what to expect out of Auburn. So even the like people are picking Charleston to beat Auburn in the first round. Tennessee, I feel very comfortable about coming out of its pod, meaning I think they're going to beat Wright State. I think they match up really well with Wright State and Loyola Chicago potentially. I'm not sure about the Miami matchup. That one's a little trickier. But Tennessee, to me, has the best shot to get out of its pod. And Kentucky, while it's playing its best basketball right now and has the most talent of anybody in the SEC, they're going up against a team that I'm picking to win the whole thing in Arizona. That's a really tough – and even if they get past Arizona, they have the number one seed in America, Virginia, waiting for them. So the matchups and the draws were awful for the SEC. Do not be surprised if one team – maybe two makes it out of the first weekend. And I think most people would look at that. I can already tell you the TV graphic's going to be up on the screen, and it's going to be like 3 or 4 and 8 or 4 and 6 SEC first weekend. Bust? Question mark? Like, you can already see the graphic on TV. And I don't think it means anything about the regular season. I think the regular season was an excellent year for the SEC. They took major strides. These are good teams. But they got bad draws in the tournament. And I would not be surprised if there are one, maybe two teams still alive on Monday when we do the show Monday morning.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. It comes down to matchups. The only SEC team I have going deep is Tennessee. I've got them getting to the Elite Eight. So I've actually got Tennessee winning their first round game today. And then I have Tennessee beating Loyola Chicago, which is another upset. And then I have Tennessee beating Ryan Porth, Cincinnati Bearcats. They get to Atlanta for the South Regional Championship against Virginia in the Elite Eight. And I think Virginia will absolutely smother them and beat them with efficiency. I could see Virginia winning that game by double digits.
See, they're a good matchup, though, for Virginia, for Tennessee's, because they're not an athlete team. They don't try to go out there and out-athlete you. They play fundamentally sound basketball. There's a lot of moving parts for Tennessee. Obviously, they're not big down low, but Virginia isn't big either. So they actually match up relatively well with Cincinnati and Virginia. But I would take Virginia, I would take Kentucky, and I would take Arizona in an Elite Eight situation. I mean, that's the problem with Tennessee, is I would take those three teams on the top half of that bracket to beat Tennessee. But I'm with you. I've got Tennessee going to the Elite Eight in Atlanta. I think the fans would show up for them if they were playing Cincinnati in that situation. My issue is I don't know where else you see a run for the SEC. I mean, Auburn could very easily get out of its pod, beat Charleston and beat Clemson or New Mexico State and get into the Sweet 16. Auburn, that would not be a shock. But I think if Florida were to get out of its pod, that would be an upset.
I'm taking a bit of a flyer here. I've got Missouri winning two games.
If Michael Porter Jr. is back and fully ready to go, like he jacked up a lot of shots in the SEC tournament, but he played well in that game for his first game back. He's a guy that could Dwayne Wayne you to the third round and beat Xavier, which would be a huge upset and be a great time here at Bridgestone Arena to see that happen. But I think I would not be shocked at that, but again, you're talking about a fairly large upset at 8-1. That doesn't happen. You know, it happens, but it's not a routine thing. The SEC needs upsets for them to make a prominent statement in this tournament. But what I don't want people to think is that if that doesn't happen, that's not a reflection of how good the league was this year. I think it's like bowl games. Too many people look at bowl records and go, oh, the Pac-12 went 1-8 this year. They were an awful league. No, that's not true. It's about matchups. They're exhibition games. Bowl games are weird. They're called differently. The tournament's about matchups. It's about seeding. It's about all these other things that can go your way or not. Like if a ball bounces one direction or the other and Xavier beats Missouri, that doesn't make the SEC a bad league. So I just think that they got a bad draw. Everybody got a bad draw. And Auburn, frankly, I don't think Auburn and Florida aren't really all that great. They're good teams. They're not great teams. So if the SEC has one team on Monday morning, I would not be surprised.
I've got Bama going into the second round against Villanova. And this one's going to hit home for me in many reasons as a Bama fan, but coming from Philadelphia, I went to Temple, graduated from Temple. So Temple and Villanova had that little public school versus private school rivalry. Is it possible that – now, look, I'm taking Nova to win the game. But if Colin Sexton gets hot,
Yeah.
Can Colin Sexton outduel Jalen Brunson and win this game?
Yeah.
Because
I mean,
Nova can be a little flaky at times.
I mean, Alabama, that is, again, this is one of those, had Alabama been a 7 seed and they matched up with Purdue even, I might, and that's what Arkansas is going to be in the second round potentially, I could see Colin Sexton pulling an upset and carrying his team because he's that good of a player. That's the beauty of the tournament, is that there are those lottery pick guys, Dwayne Wade at Marquette or whatever, where you just have, you're not an elite team, but you got an elite player, and that one guy can carry you to a couple of wins. I would not be surprised if Alabama were to go on a run because Colin Sexton gets hot and goes for 40, right? Like Steph Curry. I would not be surprised if that's what happens. Villanova, to me, again, I think this is where the SEC got a raw deal. Not an unfair deal, just an unlucky draw, and that is that Alabama would have to play arguably the best basketball program in America. I think Jay Wright and Villanova is the best program in America the last 5 years, and I don't think anyone talks about it like that. I think everyone talks about North Carolina and Duke and all these big Kentucky, all these big programs. Villanova is the most consistent, most dominant program in the country right now, and I think Villanova with Bridges, with Brunson, they started developing a post presence in the Big East tournament. I think Villanova is I just don't see – I can't pick Alabama to do it. I wouldn't be surprised, but I just can't pick it.
Have you ever seen a better-dressed coach than Jay Wright?
Tony Bennett maybe at Virginia. Those two guys kind of look alike actually. But, no, Jay Wright is the most handsome, best-dressed coach in all of college basketball.
Some quality threads
there's
right there, right?
There's no question that that's Egyptian-level, you know, 800 thread count, right? Those sheets.
All right, so let's get to the stupid poll question of the day. The update, Chase McCabe. It looks like it's a pretty close battle.
We got almost a dead heat right now. So the options for the best sports theme, and again, if you want to write something in, feel free at 1025_MD. But leading the way with 29% from Augusta, the Masters. 27% the NCAA hoops on CBS.
I'm sorry, I got to interrupt you. We just got about 30 votes. Since you started talking, it is totally updated. It is completely refreshed. It's still crazy close.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right.
But it just exploded.
So 31% the Masters, 25% NCAA basketball on CBS, 24% the SEC on CBS, 20%.
I cannot believe SEC is third.
The NBA on NBC, a write-in vote from Evan. How is NHL playoffs on ESPN hasn't been for years? Not an option. Classic.
That's fair.
We brought it up.
I think it's fair that we brought up a lot of ones that aren't currently active, so I think that they're not being used here. But I do think the fact that we went with John Tesh and the NBA on NBC, we sort of broke our own rule there. But this is an interesting debate here. It's about as even as it gets.
All right, when we come back, it is time for our weekly segment. It is Coffee with the Coach, presented by Dunkin' Donuts. And this week, it is Peter LaViolette with Preds play-by-play voice Pete Weber, but that's coming up next.
It's time for Coffee with a Coach, for Predators head coach Peter LaViolette here on the Morning Drive Show. Coach, before we get into the Predators, I want to talk about a certain DU, or Division II championship that was won by your son over the course of this last weekend, and how much of that, thanks to online, were you able to take in?
Well, it was pretty cool, actually. It was, he goes down to Florida Gulf Coast University, and they have a club hockey team, and the way club hockey has expanded throughout the country is just amazing. Almost every college now, whether you're in the south or the east or the west or the north, it doesn't matter. They have club hockey. There's hundreds of teams. They have Division I, Division II, Division III. They have women's. And so it's just a great way. Back when I was in school, you couldn't play college hockey unless you played either D1 or D3. And there's so many high school players, and now there's even more kids playing hockey. So once you finish high school, there's nowhere to go. So this ACHA has been in existence for a while now, and it's allowed kids the opportunity to continue playing hockey after high school. So I got a freshman down at Florida Gulf Coast, and they got a club team. It's a really good program, and they had a terrific year. They made it to Nationals, and they won 5 games straight. They won 5 games in 5 days and became national champs, so it's a pretty cool thing.
Did you have any idea before Jack went there they could be that good?
Yeah, I mean, their program, I think this is their third championship in 6 years, or six, 7 years maybe. Yeah. Third championship in 7 years, and they played in the finals, I think, once or twice more, and I think they've made it all 7 years. So knowing that going in, it was a good spot for him. We're Florida residents down in Longboat Key, so it was just a great opportunity for him. And You know, we were able to watch every game. They put the games the way that they stream the video now, whether it be through a program. This one was on YouTube, and you could watch the game live. So I actually flew out after our game on Saturday night. I watched him play on Sunday, came back for practice Monday, and I was just fortunate it fell between the pregame skate and the game on Tuesday, so I was able to watch the whole thing, and jumping up and down in my office, I was pretty excited.
So good scheduling for all that, and Kristen got to go as well, right?
Yeah, Kristen was out there. She saw every game, and it's just really cool. Like, anytime you can become a champion, it's very difficult to win. It's easy. I always say it's easy to lose. It's hard to win. If you can become a champion, it's something that you invest your time in, and you know, take on a whole season and a round of playoffs, and become, you know, be standing at the end. Good for you, because it's not easy to use. So we're proud of them and proud of the kids down at Florida Gulf Coast. I got to know a lot of them. I went down and coached them. I left New York City when we were in New York playing the Rangers. I got in a car and went and coached them for 3 games, and that was really good. I get to meet all the kids and the coach, and it was just an awesome experience for me as well.
Well, let's talk about your team here right now. And here you have, this is the start of a back-to-back, 3 back-to-backs now to close out the season, essentially, over the last 3 weeks. And I know that's one good reason you were rotating so many guys in and out of the lineup.
We have been. We're trying our best to keep guys fresh. And, you know, this one's a little bit better. At least it's equal. They're playing the night before as well when we head to Colorado. So this one's not so bad. But, you know, it's just travel's going to be tough and just something we got to get through. But we do have the extra bodies that we've been able to use. We've gone through different lineups and still been able to find our winning ways. So that's been a real positive for us, I think, down the stretch here.
You can see guys are fresher, can't you?
I can. We started the game the right way last night, but we lost our, I think once it went 3-0, and once we went through that power play and we didn't score, we lost our zip a little bit. And from there it was, we did enough. We got back on track in the third period and played them tough. They're a good hockey team, even with some of the people they're missing. They still have good players on the ice. So for me, it was a good win, and our guys seem to have had jump in the last maybe 10 to 12 games.
There are no secrets. Everything is televised now, and yet the great success you've had in your penalty killing unit, scoring goals, that's been rather incredible to watch unfold.
Yeah, I mean, I always say this, Pete. You always hear me say that things go in stretches. Yeah. You know, you may give up the last goal in 3 games in a row and have a game get tied up and be mad, and maybe your penalty kill ends up scoring some goals, and you might be happy, and you might not like the way you start in the first period, find yourself down. So there's always something that comes up, and you get in these little pockets of streaks. And right now, the penalty kill is doing a good job. They've been able to find some offense. They've been knocking pucks down at the blue line, knocking pucks down from the defensive zone and sprinting to offense, and we've been able to convert on a few. So it's always a bonus. I'll tell you, when you're killing a penalty and you actually score a goal, it's a huge uplift for your team because it takes it in a different direction where maybe you're going to get down a goal, you found a way to produce a goal.
One of the guys who's been scoring shorthanded is Austin Watson, and I wanted to ask you about his overall play, then another question about Austin.
Yeah, I mean, he's been terrific the way he's been playing. I think he's getting himself ready for the playoffs. If you remember how fast and physical he was last year in the playoffs for us, he's going to be down that road again very shortly. But right now he's playing good hockey. We're all being able to roll the 4 lines consistently. Every game we've rolled 4 lines, and we found a way to be successful, and he's been a big part of that.
And the second part of that he had to take that penalty to prevent that goal from going in. You don't have too much chance to decide where you're going to clear the puck.
Yeah, we've been harping on the penalties, and it's actually got away from us a little bit here. We got to get back in line here with discipline. That one will kill. It was better than the goal going in the net, so he did his best to get behind the goalie there and get it out of there just in time. But, a nice heads-up play by him.
So tonight, an Arizona Coyotes team that has been playing much better the last few weeks. What do you think about you're going to see from them?
Well, they always give us a hard time. I think they give everybody a hard time. We've got to make sure we're ready to play. I've got my radar up a little bit about this game, just coming off of a big game like Winnipeg and the travel and coming out here. And, you see them in the standings, and right away you think that they're not playing that well, but they're playing extremely well. They've got young players. They're fast. They're skilled. I think they're 6-3-1 in their last 10 games, and teams might not be taking them serious, and we don't want to fall into that trap.
All right, Coach, best of luck. That's Coffee with the Coach with head coach Peter LaViolette. Now back to Morning Drive.
Welcome back in the Morning Drive on this Thursday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Great to have you in as we are broadcasting live from the Lexus Lounge inside of Bridgestone Arena. And we've got, I don't know, at least 1,000 TVs, about 500 tables, beer taps. I mean, this is going to be a epic display. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's my first time here.
I cannot I cannot wait for the buffet to open up as well. We've got lots of good food on hand today. So Lexus Lounge and the Nashville Predators, that we did this last year. They set it up, and we had an absolute blast. It was a huge success, so much so we're doing it again. NashvillePredators.com/watchparty18. You can still get tickets because it is absolutely one of the most fun things that will ever happen. And you get to watch NCAA tournament teams practice for tomorrow's matchups, which is really cool. The Tennessee game is on early today, so if you can dip out at lunch and come by and have lunch and have a beer with us here at the Lexus Lounge, that'd be great.
And don't forget, tonight we've got our NFL Titans free agency special from 6 to 8 on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Myself, Buck Rising, Chase McCabe. We will give you all the lowdown, all the latest news on the Titans. But right now, talking about the Preds, three-game road trip, two of those three opponents below 500. This just feels like, to me, for me, an opportunity where they can seize control of many things that's on their list of to do.
Yeah, I don't think the President's Trophy is within reach on this road trip. I think that could go all the way down to the final game, potentially, between Tampa Bay and Nashville. And I think it would be a great story to have it. It's great to have the President's Trophy. It doesn't really mean anything other than you get to hang a banner and you get to have a trophy. But, you know, again, if you're one of those fans that buys into the statistics and the juju or whatever, only two teams have won the Cup in the last, since like 03, 02, basically, with the President's Trophy, for whatever that's worth. I do think, though, with a 10-point lead on Winnipeg, that if you pick up 5 out of 6 points, let's say, on this three-game road trip against what amounts to, by the way, the Arizona Coyotes are 21-20 and 8 over the last 3 months. They are above 500, so they're an above 500 hockey team for the last 3 months. Colorado is in the playoffs. Like, that's a potential first-round matchup that you're previewing, and we saw how much of a game they gave the Predators a couple of weeks ago. Nathan MacKinnon can't be stopped. There's nobody that can stop that guy. It's not going to be easy, but if you handle, and then you go to Buffalo on the road, if you can take five, get 5 out of 6 or even 4 out of 6, and Winnipeg stubs its toe this weekend, you know, 9 games to go with a 10, 11, 12-point lead in the division, that's almost insurmountable at that point. So I don't think you can do anything with the President's Trophy this weekend. But I think you might be able to clinch home ice, not clinch, but like sort of wrap up home ice and the Central Division this weekend. If you go out and handle your business, get 4 or 5 out of 6 points this weekend, I think you can wake up on Monday and come to work and think this division is all but wrapped up.
And you know how high I am on this team and how far I have them going. But at some point, and I grant it, the win streak's over, but they started up a new one on Tuesday night. At some point, do they hit a lull again before we get to the postseason? Or, God forbid, the lull comes in the postseason? Because they're just playing at a level that, mathematically, they shouldn't be playing this well.
Well, they're running out of times to have the lull, right? Like, they're running out of that. Because what you don't want is that lull to be the last 5 to 6 games going into the playoffs. We saw the Blackhawks last year. What was it? Was it 5 straight that they lost going into the playoffs last year, the Blackhawks? And the Predators jumped all over them. They weren't ready for it. The Blackhawks weren't. So what you don't want is that lull to be the last 3 to 5 games before the postseason. So you almost are like, right now needs to be the time. Like, you go on the road against some teams that are fighting for something, you know, fighting for their lives or whatever. Maybe you lose 2 out of 3, and then you look back a couple of days and you've lost 3 out of 5. Like, okay, there's your lull. Let's turn it on and let's see what they do the last 9 games. You're almost running out of time for that.
Chicago never won a game in April.
Yeah,
because they lost the last games of the regular season in April, and then, of course, we know what the Preds did.
That's what you don't want, is you don't want the lull to be what you're experiencing going into the postseason. That's all. Other than that, I'm okay with them losing a couple of games. If they lose 3 out of 5, you know, over this week or next week, okay. You know, you don't want that to be Minnesota and Winnipeg, who they play 3 times coming up. But if they lose 3 out of 5, they lose to Arizona tonight, or they lose to Colorado, they beat Buffalo, and then you look back on this week and they went two and three, or two and one. You know, we call that a struggle in the modern world of Nashville Predators hockey. I would be okay with the lull happening right now. I'd be okay with that, because then I want them to flip the switch, turn it back on. you know, win 6 out of 8 going down the stretch and be surging and playing great hockey going into the playoffs.
This really just popped into my head. Do we have to worry at all about them maybe beginning to read their own press clippings and kind of get full of themselves and buy into the fact that they are really good? Like, not complacency, but almost like borderline cocky. Like, we're really good and we just expect to win every game.
I mean, you want a confidence, right? And Scott Hartnell and Smashville Live talked about that they're a very confident group in the locker room. So you want that. But you don't want it to be too confident. You want there to be some nervous energy because that's what you want. Now, I think what's good about this team in this locker room, A, Pekkarinen. Pekkarinen is – that guy lives his life on – like, he's never – complacency is not – he doesn't know how – doesn't know what that word means. He doesn't know how to spell it. It's not a word that's in his vocabulary. Complacency is not a thing. So Pekka is still the most important piece, and he's always going to be on his game on edge. I think Mike Fisher, guys like Mike Fisher, Scott Hartnell, and Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, the leadership committee, I think their job is to make sure that doesn't happen. But I also think they know what it felt like to get so close. This is like climbing to within 2,000 feet of the top of Everest and having to turn around and go back down the mountain. When you get that close to the top of the mountain and have to turn around and come back and fail, it is I can't imagine that not being the most overwhelming emotion that the locker room feels. Is it's not, oh, we're so great, maybe I'm going to take a shift off. It's we were this close. We know what it takes to get to that close, and we need one more win. We need two more wins. We need an extra couple of nights of elite-level play. I think the loss in the playoffs is still what hangs in that locker room for those guys.
And we'll talk some more Preds later on this morning as Hal Gill will join us at 9:30, and he's presented by Park and Fly. 615-737-1025. We'll talk to Cameron Wolf, ESPN's Titan reporter, coming up at the top of the hour. But Chase McCabe, as we wind down the 7 o'clock hour, let's get an update on our stupid poll question of the day.
Yes, just go to @1025_MD. You can vote for our question, which is the best sports theme. The options are, and again, if you don't agree, then write one in. The NCAA basketball on CBS is getting 26%. The Masters is leading the way with 30%. The SEC on CBS, the football theme, 28%. And the NBA on NBC with 16%. We've gotten a couple of write-in votes. The NFL on Fox,
boo.
The NHL on ESPN, and some people are mad at us that we didn't put any NHL options, so they're writing some in. The old round ball rock theme for the NBA was awesome. Not even an NBA person, but remember that theme. That's from Jay. Ricky says, man, this is like choosing your favorite best friend for me. This is tough.
Yeah, this is like picking between children. Masters, NCAA hoops, and the SEC. I'm going NCAA hoops, and I'm not being a slave to the moment. I actually think it's just there's few things that are more synonymous that get you more excited. And while the Masters gets me excited, it's a different way. It's more of like a relaxing excitement, whereas the NCAA tournament is pure and utter chaos. It's this explosion of fun and energy and jubilation and joy. I love today, guys. This is like Christmas morning. I love today.
D Mace is here. He's ready to go. Now, we're in Bridgestone, but we're in a different section. We're at the Lexus Lounge, so we're not in Barrel House. So do we have a heating pad today or no?
No, it's on the back chair.
Oh, you brought it just in case?
Yeah, brought it just in case.
It's better,
it's better to have and never need than need and never have. I was always told that.
S-O-F-T.
And I was listening to you guys. The thing, whatever you want to call it for me, sport thing, opening song, whatever, is it has to be NBC basketball.
Well, that's why I put it on the list, because I know you brought that up yesterday.
It's just, I mean,
Starks
back in the day,
yes!
when you heard that, man.
Wish you could have made a shot in Game 7. Would have been great.
Yeah, you're right. Well, if Patrick Ewing would have made the free throw, and he had
stop,
little...
stop, stop. That was against the Pacers, different series.
Trick Ewing.
But still,
now
if he didn't make
now I'm having three different PTSD moments with the Knicks.
But yes, that and...
I was 12.
Who can ever – you can't get the Monday Night Football theme out of your head. You just can't,
dun,
man.
Dun, dun, dun.
That That might be the best thing John Madden was doing. Oh, man.
That might be the best thing about Monday Night Football. It was old school
because they had the X's and O's.
Melissa Stark was the best thing about Monday Night Football.
Nah.
She started the whole thing.
Melissa Stark was the original.
Yeah.
But nowadays, Monday Night Football is such an afterthought.
Oh, yeah.
In this day and age.
I'm all footballed out. I'm footballed out. By the time I get through the Sunday night game, I'm like, I'm done. Give me some hockey.
But the game stinks. I'm never really football out.
Because Monday nights typically they trot, unless, you know, it all depends on how the season goes, but typically they try to put good matchups on.
Sunday night gets the best game though.
What I don't like is the doubleheader on Monday night.
That's not bad. Week one.
I would rather have the doubleheader on Monday night than a Thursday night game.
Yeah,
I disagree with that.
No, from a player standpoint, they would rather have that than a Thursday night game.
But Sunday, to me, is like after you've run six consecutive go routes, you need to go to the sideline for a play. Then you can come back in on the next series.
You do go to a sideline for a play.
That's Monday night football to me. I need to sit that play out.
No, there's a gap between the last game and Sunday night football.
That's when the defense is on the field.
And you get about an hour or two where you could just relax, regroup, take your nap, go fill your bowl back up with popcorn and chips, and then you sit right back in front of
the television. I need Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night off to regas and refuel for the weekend of football the next weekend.
As Al Pacino said in Two for the Money, why is Monday Night Football the most watched game of the week? Because it's your last chance as a gambler to get out of the hole.
It's not the most watched one anymore.
No, it's not.
Sunday night dominates now.
And by the way, you like Joe Tessa as Monday Night Football now?
I love Joe Tessa. He's got great pipes. You can't outvoice Joe Tessitore. You can't.
All right, when we come back, Cameron Wolf, ESPN Titans reporter, will talk all things free agency, get his take on what John Robinson has done so far and what he has left to do. That's coming up next. Morning Drive, we're live from the Lexus Lounge on ESPN 102.5 The Game.